This is CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life, with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
Young girls and young women are seized into a type of slavery. We call it human trafficking.
Human trafficking is now the fastest growing criminal industry in the world.
I don't even like calling it human trafficking. I like calling it little kids are being raped repeatedly right now. And that should break our hearts.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, Lionel Makokotlela.
Hi, Gary, and hi to our podcasters. I'm actually a bit disturbed by the introduction of today's topic, so hence the little pause there.
Yeah, it is disturbing, isn't it?
Extremely.
Every year, thousands of men, women, and children worldwide are tricked, kidnapped, forced, sold, and ultimately used and abused by the hideous people known as human traffickers.
It's quite a sad reality, but it's something that we need to really talk about just so that our podcasters can actually be aware of it and do something about it.
Yeah, I guess, Linus, South Africa is also a great source and transit and destination country for human trafficking, very sadly so. And we have a severe problem here at home, something that must be addressed with all our might.
Certainly, we need to really stand together and united in this case, just so that we can really try and protect the young and the vulnerable people in our communities, just so that this becomes something that stops right now.
Yeah, joining us to explain the extent of the crisis in South Africa and what we are doing to combat this curse is a man who spent more than 15 years dedicating his time and his life, really, to researching the crime and the impact it has on and in South Africa. A very big warm welcome to you, Marcel van der Vaart.
Good afternoon, Gary and Lionel and the listeners.
Thank you, Baya. I'm
Yeah, we're going to introduce Marcel a little more, in a little more detail, little later, Lines. Lines, it's this week that the world commemorates the World Day Against Trafficking in Persons. In fact, it was yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's a United Nations event organized to raise awareness and encourage vigilance and gain support for prevention of human trafficking.
It's a really serious crime indeed, Gary. And I would really urge our podcasters or our listeners to really share to many of the relatives as possible with regard to this podcast, just so that they are becoming quite aware and also just know what to do in the event that one of their children or their relative become a prey to this.
Absolutely, Lions. We at Cliff Central are proud to play our role in this by presenting this very show.
Certainly.
And it's our prayer at Cliff Central that the exploitation and the vulnerable, especially our children, and all this is brought to a stop.
Certainly.
Our partner today, Legal Talk South Africa, with its massive and powerful membership, they're going to put this up on their Facebook page, and we welcome that and we thank them for that. Ray Green.
Certainly.
Lines, our Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg.
And our Twitter handle is at Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W. You can always just drop us a mail or a line. Just simply tell us what is it that you'd like us to talk about. We'll find a specialist who can break down the subject for you, just so that you get to understand it from the basic of all knowledge.
Our guest today, Marcel van der Vaart, has gained international recognition for his work in counter-human trafficking, to counter it. He participates on provincial and national human trafficking task teams in South Africa. He lectures as well at UNISA's Department of Police Practice, and he's recently completed a PhD.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
On the issue of human trafficking. We umper going to call him Doctor.
Yeah.
It's coming up soon. Welcome again to you, Doctor. Well, not quite, Marcel van der Vaart.
Thanks,
Marcel, maybe you can tell us about some of the awards that you've received on the subject and tell us a bit about your law enforcement and investigative background.
Well, thanks again, guys. Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure and a privilege. And Cliff Central, thank you guys for ventilating this issue. We're not talking about it enough. lot of complexities to it. But yeah, my background started in 2002 as a member of the Port Elizabeth Flying Squad. And back then, South Africa has not yet ratified international legislation. So back then, human trafficking was on nobody's lips. And I experienced it firsthand in the sex trade with women working on the street. Obviously, not all of them being victims of human trafficking. That's where the contentious issue of agency comes in. Mm. But many of the women, so back then, you know, we generated statistics. So one of your instructions was when the priority crimes are not coming in, you drive around with a truck and you pick up women, you know. Mm. And yeah, once you detained a lot of these ladies at the police station, you would then hear the stories and the pleas, but I don't really want to be here, you know. I came from Kimberley or Pretoria or Johannesburg. So that's where it started, 2006 with the Child Protection Unit, and then 2008 I joined the Hawks to investigate projects on human trafficking, more specifically organized crime nationally. And yeah, that's where it started. And yeah, the awards and the recognition basically came with kind of unconcealing a lot of the issues related to human trafficking. And yeah,
I think Marcel, you've said that there's a misconception, a common misconception prevailing in South Africa, that human trafficking is about sex trafficking only, and that's not true. Mm. What can you tell us about the various forms of trafficking?
Okay, sure. Well, I mean, that's an important issue. Various forms. So there's just on the definition, basically, I'm really going to oversimplify it, but there's a recruitment phase where somebody is recruited, and then there's a means. So people recruit people, and before they exploit them, there's either force, deception, the abuse of vulnerability, partial deceit, full deceit that happens, and then people are exploited. And the Act is very clear for any form or manner of exploitation. So the Act basically refers to a couple, which includes domestic servitude, labor, sexual exploitation, which is typically known as sex trafficking, organs and body parts. And those are but a small number of forms for which people are exploited. And definitely not just sex trafficking. I would argue that the overwhelming majority of trafficking victims in South Africa, however they may not have been identified yet, is in the labor market, an informal labor market. Yeah.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Let's talk about the international syndicates that are reported to operate in South Africa with absolute disregard and impunity. Who are these syndicates?
I just have to point out, after the show, I'm going to the Pretoria High Court, and it's probably one of the first cases where there's quite a large number of people arraigned before the court. Five, I think it's five or six guys. There's a mixture of local West African Nigerian nationals with local Afrikaans speaking males involved in that syndicate. But the report, and from my own experience, West African syndicates, Nigerian, Chinese, Thai, Russian, Bulgarian, they all operate pretty much, obviously, you know, the elements of the definition of the crime, that's how they basically do it. But with this kind of, when we're talking about a syndicate, I think that's just important to clarify that. I would argue that these syndicates are loosely connected, and they function on a convenient relationships. You know, today I use you, tomorrow I don't, you know. And that is what makes it so difficult to pin these guys down. But they are operating with quite a large extent of impunity, sadly.
Let's talk about something that really offends us greatly, and as a father of a young child, child trafficking and children in sex trade. What's your ongoing experience in court cases? What's going on out there?
Now, just to preface that, Gary, child trafficking in South Africa is another convoluted, highly politicized issue, okay? And there's reasons for that. We may deconstruct that later on. But, you know, in the early years running up to the World Cup, you know, a lot of NGOs and so-called abolitionists have cited statistics for arguments like 30,000 children being trafficked in and out of South Africa annually. Mm-hmm. Nowhere was empirical evidence confirming or corroborating that. And that number went up to 40,000 2000 and later that even escalated. So the problem, it's highly politicized because it also interweaves with ongoing legislative issues around decriminalization of sex work and whether child trafficking really is a problem. So that's part of that. But the child trafficking is an absolute reality in South Africa, in many ways systemic. And I think our structural inequalities in South Africa allows human trafficking to seamlessly embed itself. And we often see people exploited, and sadly many people turn their eyes away and they don't engage with it. But in the sex trade, we're increasingly seeing social media. We even have, in some of the cases that I'm involved with, children, sex trafficking children, uploaded on online adult sex websites, which some of them advertise on our lamppost. You drive past some of them. Mm. We're not going to go into the names now, but we know who those are. It's well documented. So what happens are some of these children are recruited. Just to kind of clarify, a child is any person under the age of 18. And very often drugs is involved in that. And the pimp, the trafficker summons a photographer of one of these mainline websites to come. Photographs are being taken and those photos are uploaded. You will never see the face of the child, which will obviously compound the business principles of how these guys operate. But there's a market for it, and that's a sad thing. You know, human trafficking for sex and labor is enabled by demand.
Wow. So, sorry, how do they actually recruit the... I know you've kind of alluded to it. Mm. How do they recruit these young women?
Mm.
And I guess boys as well.
Yeah, sure.
Do they pay their parents, or is there money?
Well, there's definitely, I mean, there's a variety of ways in which children are recruited and eventually exploited. But once again, coming back to the structural inequalities, a lot of these, many children, get addicted, sadly, to drugs at a very young age. There's social media. Mm. A few months ago, I had one case, for argument's sake. It was during the school holidays. I think it was September, October last year. Two girls being looked after by the granny, and they literally Googled, how do we make money? So they Googled how to make money. They came up to a cell phone number which linked them to a gentleman in Hillbrow. They phoned the guy, said, you know what, just come to Hillbrow, I'll make you rich. Something as simple as that. Mm. Many children disappear in communities and they're not even reported missing by family members. So there's a lot of problems with regards to data capturing and getting empirical evidence for how big this problem is. But if you consider all the structural issues and systems and administration that's lacking, you know, once you understand the whole of that, you realize how vulnerable our communities are in the country.
Wow. Sorry, just on these children trafficking, are these what sort of background are these children who actually fall prey to this sort of syndicates come from?
Well, you know what, Lionel? You know, obviously there's predisposing factors, right? So if we're talking about poverty, lack of education, the addiction to dependence-producing substances, tick, drugs, those things obviously predisposes children or any adult person for the matter of fact. But, you know, I always like to refer to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So those who might not know it, there's five layers. Right at the bottom layer, it's the need for physiological needs, you know, warmth, food, water. Right on top is the need for self-actualization. That's where me, you, and many of our listeners might fall prey. So all of us can be vulnerable in one way or the other. Mm. I had victims. One of the victims that I had, I had two victims of sex trafficking victims who were social workers. The other one was married to a policeman. Mm. So those are typically people that you will not imagine could possibly have fallen prey to this issue.
Well,
I've got a problem. Sorry, I'm digressing slightly. Personally, sure. I have a problem with the unabridged birth certificates, and a lot of people do, and a lot of tourists have been turned away, and our industry has been affected by it. You have to, if you're bringing a child without both parents, I think, you have to produce an unabridged birth certificate at border control. Mm. Has this been brought in order to curb or stop trafficking, or has it got absolutely nothing to do with it?
Well, the first thing that I'm going to say, once again acknowledging that, that in itself is a very, very contentious issue. However, the minister, ill-advised, I would argue, quoted, he regurgitated the 30,000 children being trafficked annually, for which there's no evidence. Mm. So whether that was the sincere intention of the unabridged birth certificate, certificates, or whether there was some other agenda behind it, I can't comment on that. However, I would state this unequivocally, that in 2015, when this was introduced, within the first 7 days, we reported on the different task teams that there were 4 children and parents, quote unquote, or adults stopped at ports of entry, which, according to the law enforcement officials and people that assessed the situation, argued that these children would most probably have been trafficked. And we're talking about 4 in the first week. I think there was 1 in Cape Town and the rest was up here in Gauteng. So the problem is now the media reports on this, and I mean everybody lambastes the Home Affairs strategy and understand the lack of empirical evidence on which it was based, but then you inform them, but listen, we had recent incidents, and sadly those, the fullness of the story is often not reported on, but complex scenario.
Absolutely. Wow. Marcel, you've been may I say that of the many papers you've written, and you've written tons of them, one of the papers you write about, you talk of juju, J-U-J-U, rituals. What is that?
Okay, so the first time I heard the term juju, now we're not talking about our beloved politician here, but the first time I heard the term juju was, again, back in 2002, driving in a police van, the flying squad car, and, the girls again, concealing, sir, but, you know, I don't want to be in this job. I said, well, just leave it, go back home. No, but there's juju that's been used on me. Some would refer to the term juju, others won't. So just in a nutshell, juju is for Nigerian, especially let's talk about the criminal element or the West African element, like muti is for local belief systems, okay? So there's a general agreement amongst both the Nigerian criminal population and locals that juju is stronger than muti. So many may know what muti is used for. It could be used for the good, the bad, and the ugly. The same thing with juju. So what happens is, the criminal elements in these Nigerian networks are very good at identifying a vulnerability and the vulnerabilities that underpins the use or whether juju is going to be used as a way to control is superstition, cultural belief systems, and animist belief systems, so to speak. So basically, I would then tell you, there's this ritual, and the purpose of the ritual is in communicating to the victim, this is going to protect you. So there's a ritual, candles, sometimes the drinking of blood, the incisions being made, a suit that's been lumped together, made up of menstrual blood, nail clippings, pubic hair, skull. These are put into a concoction, and that concoction is then basically, and this is one of many ways in which this can happen, is then rubbed into the wounds.
The wounds are after the little girl or the young woman has been cut.
It's not just children, right? This happens to adults as well. Okay. So small incisions, it's you can barely see it with the naked eye, but small incisions being made, this suit comprises of all these elements being rubbed in, and the person or the victim then made to believe that the spirit is in you. So I don't have to lock you up. I don't have to threaten you. You have been warned that should you disclose to the police what is happening to you, that something very bad will happen to you. You will lose your child, you would lose your mother. So so basically what these guys are doing, they tap into the primal belief systems of people, and that's a form of control that almost far outweighs any physical measure of restraint, because it's a belief system and there's also a psychological dimension. So for all, I'm going to use one last example. So somebody would die on the street, maybe there's another victim or a person that's run over by a car. Then the story starts spreading by these syndicate members that, so-and-so and so, she tried to run away, she took the juju oath, she died because she disclosed. Mm-hmm. So that's how it's reinforced, and how this belief in the juju
is that originates from Nigeria?
Specifically West Africa, Nigeria, Benin.
Have you heard of this, Lars?
Yes, no, I have. Because what it normally... Cause, oh, by the way, I lived in a place where there used to be prostitution, so there were quite a lot of drug dealings also taking place. However, what actually happens is that the indoctrination, it works in a very funny way in a sense that people can actually leave the property, but at a specific time they'll come back for whatever, whether for a short or whatever rituals they actually have to do. So that is just basically how that indoctrination affects the psychological thinking of a person. And it's quite sad to see the powerlessness of these people actually being controlled by something that is actually not
by easy. A spirit.
Yeah. And it's widespread. I mean, you know, a lot of the juju for victims that are trafficked to the UK, to Spain, to Italy. The juju rituals are actually being conducted in Nigeria. So the juju priests, the oaths are taken, they then go over to where the UK, Spain, Italy, and there the juju rituals often repeated. And sadly, the West refers to this as voodoo rituals. Even in our local TIP report, trafficking report, it's referred to as voodoo. And that's not entirely the accurate description of it, but it's rife. It's being used and many people fall prey and believe in this. And that's another issue that's challenging the courts. So the defense wants to know, so why did you not run away? You weren't shackled. The door weren't locked.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Why didn't you run away? And another thing, what happens to anybody that's sexually assaulted? Mm. She goes to a medical practitioner. What happens during the medical examination? A J88 form is completed. Vaginal swabs are taken. Nail clippings are often scraped. And pubic hair samples are taken, which almost is a mirror reflection of the juju ritual. So you understand how this plays into the hands of traffickers. And
So the defense has a great case that says to the woman, why didn't you run away? And she can't really explain it.
Then again, once she even refers to the juju,
she
might quote unquote fall ill and die right in the dock. So it's multiple complexities. There was a case in Johannesburg where juju rituals was performed on a 15-year-old girl, also a Nigerian accused before the court. The issue of juju never came out during the entire trial. However, when the judge said guilty, the girl kind of just basically in the aisles, in the corridors of the court, ran to the prosecutor and told her what happened to her. So basically the fact that the accused was found guilty kind of confirmed to her that, this was all a lie. There's no power in this juju, you know? So it's very, very complex. And,
But how do we then work with the psychology, the psychology of the mind of the victims, just so that they get to see the light at the end of the tunnel? Because I believe that the storm, when you are in the middle of the storm, you don't necessarily see it.
The first thing is you validate. Okay. You validate and say, you know, I believe that for you this is real. And I think then there's a process where you assess what the psychosocial needs of the victim is. And I mean, those are multiple ways of determining that. But there's obviously some form of spiritual counseling and, you know, that needs to take place. And, you know, quite intense psychosocial interventions.
You talk of trafficking. Is it very prevalent that a lot of our children and women are being trafficked overseas, or is it mainly trafficked within South Africa?
Yeah. To a lesser extent, is South Africa. We are a source country, destination, and a transit country. But to a lesser extent, we do have people that are recruited. We have reports of Europe, Asia, Malta, Mauritius. From my own research, you know, that's confirmed. I had the recent case that I testified in the Johannesburg High Court. The victim overheard whilst the two accused persons were speaking that they were planning to sell her for 50,000 rand, probably about 4,000 US, to somebody in the States. So they made plans to send her over to the US. One of my first missing persons cases linked to trafficking, the last information I received is that the girl was trafficked to Nigeria. So then there's also the issue of the drug trade, you know, drug smuggling, where people are recruited and almost coerced and manipulated into taking drugs. Sometimes they know they're carrying drugs, sometimes they don't, but they end up in international prisons. So,
What age are these women or girls?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, it all, when we're talking about trafficking in general, what age are the victims?
Well, the ones that were going to be shipped over to the U.S.
Well, this one was 19 years old. That's, I'm now referring specifically to the previous case. She was a 19-year-old Afrikaans colored girl from Kimberley. Mm-hmm. And this is what they planned to do with her. I had a case about 4 years ago where a very, very well-known South African celebrity, I'm not going to say more than that, were duped into a modeling contract, and she, plane tickets was booked to go to the UAE. Mm-hmm. And she reached out to me through the work of the National Freedom Network. We checked it, and it was a West African syndicate, and she was most probably going to be trafficked. So once again, the vulnerability element is permeates through all of us.
Mm. How many South Africans are overseas having been trafficked? Have you got any idea?
No indication. I mean, globally, the issue of statistics is very, very complex, and the methodologies are frequently critiqued. Mm. So we don't know. I mean, you know, even anywhere in the world, can we accurately say how many people are trafficked? You must understand, human trafficking is a hidden crime, it's a subversive crime, and it doesn't lend itself to being counted and quantified. And I think I often tell people that statistics gives us the illusion of control. Statistics really doesn't tell you much. If you consider a country like South Africa, you need to understand the backstory behind every statistic, and I can share an example of that. But
if you open the newspapers, if you look on the net, you see a lot of slavery articles. Tell us about what's going on there. What is slavery in today's modern times? Does it exist?
Yeah, slavery is a very, very emotive language. And there's still active legislation in South Africa where you could prosecute a person for when exploitation or in a position or condition of slavery was used. But slavery, pretty much, like the UK's Modern Slavery Act, they refer to it as modern slavery. They don't refer to human trafficking. I think slavery kind of brings up a lot of thoughts, you know, dating back to the 1800s, 1900s. Mm. But fundamentally, at its essence, we are really speaking about the same issue. And I think what we need to understand is that human trafficking has been there time immemorial. It's been there. I mean, we often speak about Saartjie Baartman as being one of the first documented cases of human trafficking. We need to acknowledge our history in South Africa, our inequality, racism, stuff that persists. And, I mean, human trafficking has obviously happened in masses probably in the past 100 years. And sadly, today people are waking up and they're speaking about human trafficking, modern slavery, as if it never occurred to them that it ever happened. Mm. It's always been there. It's one person subjugating another for the purpose of its greed, fundamentally perpetuated by greed, yeah.
Is the word slavery just used because it creates emotion, or are people actually slaves of another?
Well, if you look at what actually happens, slavery is very much, in many of these situations, a very, very accurate description. Sadly, however, I mentioned the sensation around slavery, how you do have NGOs and abolitionists and activists, and there's always a monetary incentive that often goes along with combating slavery, you know. So, you know, that's the politics of human trafficking, which we probably won't go into here. But definitely, I mean, you know, I've had situations where people were literally chained up. In my study, it came out, and I know personally of situations that I've dealt with. In my study, tooth being pulled, you know, legs broken, irons being used. It's horrific.
That's how we get Lionel here, I think. We've got to drag him in and put irons onto him.
No.
Not quite, Lance.
Not quite. No. But it just sounds so serious in a sense that what you are actually painting, it's the same picture that we tend to see in most broken homes where the woman is actually being slaved every single day, chained in the house, being beaten, but she cannot do anything because she's got children with this man. Mm. So for me, it plays a critical scenario, especially from a black community, because we are seeing this quite a lot of time, but we didn't know what to actually label it. Mm. But now today we've got labels to simply say that's slavery or abuse or anything of that nature. So how can we as the youth of today play a critical role in terms of creating awareness in this sort of area, just so that people become empowered? And what sort of help can they go for if then we are seeing such a phenomenon?
And can I take that question one step further? If anyone believes or they have a suspicion that there's human trafficking, or they could be a victim themselves, there's an organization called National Freedom Network that I think you're attached in some way. Tell us more about that and how people can get help. There are a lot of girls and guys out there that need help. Is this where they turn?
Sure. So I'm just going to quickly go back to Lionel's first point. I think it's always, because the issue of human trafficking is highly emotive and very politicized and very convoluted, also be careful not to conflate issues. So it's a situation where a woman is in a house with her children, with a husband, being quote-unquote enslaved, might not necessarily be a case of human trafficking. That needs to be deconstructed. Mm-hmm. But you're right, the issue of subjugation, where women and children really becomes commodities.
Yes.
And not just in that situation, but where the commodification spills over into other criminal economies. Creating awareness, Lionel, we have a national resource number. It's 0800-222-777. So people seeing anything in the community, people being abused, a brothel, any form or manner of exploitation, please call that number. I usually get involved where there's level 3, 4, 5 organized crime syndicates. I like to obtain the statements. I like to get involved in that capacity. If it's more serious, more convoluted. But the National Freedom Network, I do case management for the National Freedom Network. So it's an NGO that's almost like the umbrella umbrella term for hundreds, really, of stakeholders and NGOs working in this field. And our purpose really is to make sure that everybody's connected to each other, that we know who's offering what services, and that should there be a crisis situation, we are able to intervene and connect people to different role play stakeholders and resources.
Excellent. National Emergency Helpline, 0800-222-777.
That's it.
Yeah. 24/7 they're open.
Yes, absolutely.
You can get someone there all the time.
Absolutely, and they're doing a great job.
So just give us some more pointers. If you believe what? When should you call this?
Yeah. Well, I always use the example of a deer in the wild. If there's a deer in the wild, imagine the Kruger Park. And if a deer smells a lion, what does a lion do? What does a deer do? Sorry. The deer runs away, And I think us as human beings, we often smell a lion, but we negotiate with it. Am I see? Is it really what it is? Could this be? If you do have a hunch of any form or possible form or manner of exploitation happening to an individual, groups of individuals, please call that number. Often we have great cases in the courts and convictions where simply it was the public who saw, there's this big house or there's a flat in my neighborhood and there's a lot of cars stopping there throughout the day. One day I saw there was a child in the window. She briefly came out, she went back in. It's just suspicious, Intuitively it doesn't make sense. Phone the resource
lolly
line.
Lollipop lounges in some of the areas.
Yeah, lolly lounges.
Lolly lounges.
Yeah. Well, that's obviously the intersection of drugs and, commercial sexual exploitation of children, which, comes down to trafficking in many ways.
We don't have or should I say it this way, we have a handful of skilled and dedicated social workers, prosecutors and police investigators. Do we have enough and... can we sustain, are we strong enough to fight the corrupt elements that are out there?
Yeah. So I'm going to give you a couple of responses. The first thing is to echo absolutely what you say. The people that I'm working with in the field, Lionel and Gary, I'm so inspired and encouraged by their dedication. 2 weeks ago, I had a consultation session with two prosecutors, half past eight in the evening.
You're very welcome to mention names if you want to.
Sure. So the prosecutors, police officials, social workers, absolutely dedicated. Capacity, resources is a major challenge, and they are far too few who are tackling this major issue. Is it sustainable? Absolutely not. I'm a firm believer that we need dedicated and specialized capacity, similar model to the Scorpions, to fight this issue. Human trafficking is not just a crime, it's an organized crime. Human trafficking goes along with drugs, weapons, a host of other issues. So you need specialized investigation. investigators and prosecutors functioning together in a multi and interdisciplinary team. Is that happening at the moment? No, it's not happening at the moment.
Is there any way the public can help reservists, things like that, or are they not qualified sufficiently?
Yeah, well, I think the public can make contact with the National Freedom Network. You know, if you want to become a partner in your organization, whether it's a corporate company that wants training on what human trafficking is and issues of supply chain. You know, some of our supply chains are compromised, you know. Do you know where this handbag that you're buying in the corner of Jorison Street comes from? You know, who designed it? Who put it together? The same with clothing and shoes. Often we have corporate supply chains that are compromised, and so we need to understand fair trade and how we are often indirectly or sometimes directly complicit in the abuse. Yeah.
South Africa has apparently been downgraded, I read very recently, for failing to combat human trafficking satisfactorily. Is that correct, and where are we going wrong?
The major thing there, the issue there, well, look, there's a host of issues that's addressed and critique that is leveled against the country. But I think the tipping point was the lack of government investment in operationalizing the act. No money to operationalize the act. So that means, in effect, government funding needed to train frontline officials, to create awareness, create the skill sets to address this issue. Because, yeah, I mean, you don't want a paper tiger that's going to not really going to, you know, be able to buy. So we need to put the money in there. And I think, coming back to your question, that was probably one of the most serious tipping point reasons as to why we were downgraded to a watch list. Yeah.
There are a lot of children that seem to go missing. It's all you always see it. This little kid on Facebook is missing. And is this anything to do with trafficking, or is it some other terrible crime?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Look, there's always a reason. People don't just go. There's always a reason why people go missing, you know. So, and I think we are far, far too quick to say, oh, well, it's a problem child, you know. Some people deliberately go missing. You've got some people who actually want to just take a break of life. They don't tell anybody. They just disappear. You know, then there's health reasons, you know, Alzheimer's, somebody falls ill, there's accidents. There's very number of reasons. But with regards to the interconnection with human trafficking, I think we need to start reconfiguring our lens through which we look at missing persons and missing children, because very seldom there might very well be a nexus between the two. I mean, I'm going to use one example. I mean, I've earlier referred to the fact that some parents don't even report their children missing. The one case we had a few years back was a mom and her boyfriend that reported the mom's child missing. And when the police went to look for the child, they found a child a couple of kilometers away living in a tent with eight other children. And they said, well, your mom is looking for you. I said, no, my mom knows exactly where I am. The only reason it was found out at the end she reported the child missing was because they chased the child away, and family members were starting questioning, but, you know, where's the child? So missing persons and the reporting mechanisms, it's complex. Just for the listeners out there, if you feel that somebody is missing or that something is out of character, report them missing. There's no such thing as a 24-hour rule, and that's an important issue that needs to be reinforced.
Sorry, repeat that, because people think that a kid's got to be missing. I think we see it on TV. You've got to wait 24 hours?
Absolutely not, no.
You
report them missing
immediately. Where do you go?
Well, you usually go within the station,
charge office,
the station area, and please, if you get any people showing your way or not taking your case, please make sure that you get the rank, name, surname of the official, ideally a personal number as well. And please share my details. I'll be more than willing to help where I can, and we can follow up on those issues.
Excellent. Let's talk a little law. We are a law show. We have this law called Prevention and Combating of Trafficking in Persons. There is a law.
Absolutely.
It came in with 2013, somewhere around
And it was operationalized on the 9th of August 2015, and I would argue it's probably one of the best piece of legislation in the world.
But does anyone ever get convicted?
Oh yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We are seeing an increasing number of cases being convicted. Once again, too few people working on these cases. But yes, we're getting convictions on the previous piece of legislation. That was under the Sexual Offences Act 32 of 2007. We recently had on appeal the conviction and the sentencing was confirmed. The one life sentence, the one of Mabuza, the Mabuza matters, also Mozambican children, 8 life sentences. So
what were the facts of that case?
Well, he had somebody that worked for him, and there was also relational issues there, and she basically recruited children from Mozambique. They were kept in sordid, literally slave-like conditions, and they were exploited.
For sex or for labor?
Sex. That was sex. So the problem, the challenge with us currently, and that's where we need to increase our focus and energy, is on identifying the case of labor trafficking, and there's more than enough evidence suggesting that we have problems in that sphere. I can use one example of illegal mining. I saw an informant 2 months ago, and I drove from Centurion. I met him in Orange Farm, and this guy was part of a syndicate that was trafficking men from Mozambique into the Vaal area, Vaal and the Welkom area. And he said, we bring in average of 45 males per week, aged between 15 and 24. Wow. These guys come in and they come to do mining, but not knowing.
Zamazamas, I think.
Yeah, Zamazamas, yeah. So they go into these illegal mines. Many of them commit according to the informant, many of them either commit suicide or they are murdered because they become obstinate. And some of them are just, they just die because of injuries. And, according to this guy, at least about 2 million rand cash that's taken out of the country every Sunday. So it's rife,
but
yeah.
What sort of support, mental support, is there for survivors of this of victims in this sort of cases?
Yeah. So there's psychosocial support, dedicated capacity within Department of Social Work, social development that deals with victims of trafficking. There are shelters, taking care of the psychosocial and the trauma issues.
And do they become fully functional human beings after that, or do they constantly need support?
Lionel, I don't have many examples, unfortunately, of people that's gone through the entire process of healing. There are victims and survivors, rather, of human trafficking that does a lot of public speaking and engaging on the issue, but sadly, people are scarred for a very long time, many of them for life. So,
If you want to read up on the subject, Marcel van der Vaart has written some amazing work. It's mostly on the net. You can pick it up. Just Google Marcel. It's good stuff, Marcel. I've spent many hours reading this, and I found it so interesting. Things like there's organizations, I think, in Somalia that are using people for terror work. They've trafficked them as well. What's that all about?
Well, those are smuggling cum trafficking networks. So we have people smuggling Somalian and Eritrean nationals through our borders. Lots of corruption at the borders, well documented. So you have these guys coming from Somalia, some of them from Eritrea as well, and the information and the intelligence suggests that that the financial beneficiaries of these smuggling operations are organizations like Al-Shabaab. So in effect, what we could argue is that there's smuggling trafficking operations happening from other parts of Africa into our country, where financial beneficiaries are terrorist organizations. And that's a significant thing that needs to be understood, deconstructed, and addressed. So you need to also understand there's a difference between smuggling and trafficking. In a nutshell, smuggling is a voluntary agreement between a person that wants to enter a country illegally with a smuggler, whereas trafficking is directed against a person. Smuggling directed against, it's a crime against the state. However, people generally being smuggled are all vulnerable to trafficking, and many smuggling situations doesn't stop with smuggling. It kind of morphs into trafficking as well.
How do they get these people across the border, say from Mozambique? Is it under the fence, or is it?
Well, yeah, I'd say, Gary, there's, it all depends on what a pipeline of contacts these guys use. I mean, if you know somebody at the border, the entry, it's seamless. You can get somebody through the country, but there's many ways, through the fences, you know, they, well, yeah, so there's many ways many through ways, which yeah. they get into the country. Yeah.
There's a book out in the UK. I don't know whether you've seen it. It's read it. It's called Unthinkable. Mm. It's a scandal of Britain's trafficked children.
Mm.
And it happened in 2012 when a gang of 9 men were convicted.
Mm.
I don't know if you've read it. If our listeners want to pick it up,
I haven't read
it's
it,
called
yeah.
Unthinkable. Very interesting.
Yeah.
In the UK. Yeah.
Another thing that I would love to hear from your visitors, your listeners.
Mm.
You know, the issue of adoption irregularities, there is compromised practices happening on adoption system as well. You know, allegations of cases and details being fabricated against family, children being confiscated or removed from family, and then eventually ending up in the adoption system.
Mm.
Adoption agencies making millions of rands because of irregular adoptions. And many of them, especially where there's an eventual exploitation of the children, that might be deemed child trafficking cases. So there's, I think the problem in South Africa, a lot of our systems doesn't work properly, and it's open to abuse and exploitation mm-hmm. and corruption. And you always have, you know, a criminal element that's got an eye for a loophole and a vulnerability which isn't exploited.
Marcel van der Vaart, it's been a wonderful discussion. It's good for our people to know this, Lines.
Well, certainly.
A lot of us kind of walk around with our heads in the sand,
yeah.
and we don't really realize what's going on out there.
No, that's true yeah. indeed. And it has been reported that 30,000 children are prostituted through human trafficking annually in South Africa.
Mm.
That's 30,000 children.
And that, well, then again, those are the statistics that's highly, well, I'm even criticizing that.
Mm.
Because, you know, once again, you've got a lot of these lies that's really perpetuated on social media. I've got one on my phone now. There was none such research done, you know, mm. confirming empirically that there is so much children.
Mm.
So we also need to check, you know, also need to check the facts. Africa Check has done some great work in criticizing some of the stats, so we need to apply a healthy dose of skepticism.
But how can we, as parents, as brothers, as sisters, sort of like become aware of pattern of change in terms of behaviors mm. of the young ones so that they don't fall prey to this sort of syndicate?
Yeah,
great
yeah,
question there.
Yeah.
How do we protect our kids?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think I think the family unit is just so important. Mm. You know, there shouldn't be any no-go areas.
Mm.
You know, there shouldn't be a closed door where a parent is not allowed to go in. You know who the friends are, know what are the WhatsApp groups are, what are the sites that's been visited. You know, you often find children being groomed online and eventually, you know, being trafficked or exploited. So I think it's connecting with the kids, knowing what's going on, and having a relationship of trust and a network of trust around that child. So
yeah, absolutely. You give your kid a lot of love and mm. know exactly what they're up to.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sadly, yeah. I mean, often yeah. I often say that, you know, I often criticize parents and say, oh, it's not, you know, it's not deviant kids. It's often deviant parents, you mm. know.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Marcel, many thanks for this. Anything
great
before we let you go that we
great
haven't asked
well
you?
Again, Cliff Central, thank you guys for ventilating and covering this issue.
Yeah.
Complex, but so much it needs to be deconstructed.
Absolutely.
So thank you guys.
Many thanks to you, Lines. Before great, we let you. You go, thanks very much. Until next Tuesday.
Yes.
Cheers till then. Thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.